Welcome to Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of the Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. The Gila National Forest is in the early stages of revision of its forest plan that will guide the management of forest resources for the next 15 years or more. Public participation is a key part of this collaborative process, and public meetings will be held starting next week to discuss the recently released draft assessment report. Today, we'll be talking about the forest planning process, the assessment findings, and more with Nathan Newcomer, an Earth Matters co-producer and Gila grassroots organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Allison. Thank you so much.
Glad you're here with us. So Nathan, given all of the time you spend out in the Gila, you know the forest better than anyone I know. Can you tell our listeners more about your work and its importance?
Yeah, sure. So I've been down here in the Gila for a little over 3 years now, working on wilderness inventories and wild and scenic river studies in the Gila National Forest. We've got a great group of volunteers in Grant County that have been participating in this project, and I really have to give them a big shout out for all their efforts and support, because without them, there's really no way we would have been able to do all the work that we've done. And to date, we have documented 650,000 acres of potential new wilderness in the Gila National Forest. Currently, we have about 700,000 acres of designated wilderness with the Gila, the Alto Leopold, and the Blue Range. But we've documented about 650,000 acres of potential new wilderness, and that's just a lot of land that's out there. There is a lot of roadless land in the Gila National Forest. It's very pristine, very untrammeled, untouched, very wild. And we've also looked at about 200 some odd miles of rivers and streams in the Gila National Forest that could be designated as wild and scenic, including obviously the Gila River and the San Francisco River are sort of the main river segments in the Gila that we've been looking at and documenting. So it's been really fun. We're still heavy into field season right now. The weather's really beautiful still here in late October, which is really nice. So it's important, because I think that development and population growth in the United States is growing everywhere you look. Albuquerque is exploding in population, and we're having less and less places permanently protected in our public land system. The Gila National, in the state of New Mexico, rather, has about 2% of our public lands are permanently protected as wilderness. Just 2% of our public lands are permanently protected as wilderness. So that's a really small number. And so I think that looking forward into the future and for future generations, we should be thinking about protecting places for those future generations, because quite frankly, we're not making more wilderness in terms of the natural landscape. What we have is what we have, and we have to protect all of it as much of it as we possibly can, I think.
Wow, that's so impressive that you and your volunteers have done so much work. I also hear, Nathan, you're an excellent cook, so there's always a waiting list for your inventory field trips. So,
well, I like to say that, to be a good organizer, you have to be very thankful with your volunteers, and one way to thank them is to feed them. And so, yeah, I do enjoy cooking food for everybody. It's they're great events. We all get to hang out. We all get to go run around the forest and do good work at the same time. But then afterwards, hang around a campfire, eat some food, and share stories. So, yeah, it's a good camaraderie building event.
That's great. And good skills building, too, right? People
Absolutely.
Are learning how to use GPS equipment.
Right. Right. Yeah. So we'll get a sort of a combination of different experts on our trip. Some people might be great at identifying birds. Somebody else might be great at identifying predator tracks, on the ground. Other people might know things about the stars, even like when. So you can get a good consortium of people together, and people can learn about other interests and other topics, as well as learning how to document for wilderness characteristics. And pretty much everybody, everybody that has been involved in this sort of started from a place of no knowledge. Like, how do you do a wilderness inventory? How do you do a wild and scenic river inventory? And they didn't know how to do that. And so everybody came to the table with an open mind. And yeah, you had struggles along the way, but we all struggled along the way, but we all learned together. So it's a great group. We're always looking for more people to get involved, because Gila National Forest is such a gigantic area that there's a lot of land to look at out there. And so if folks listening want to get more engaged, feel free to, you know, get in contact with me.
And how do people do that?
My email address is very simple. It's Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, at nmwild.org. Again, that's Nathan at nmwild.org.
And we'll be talking a little bit later here in the program how these inventories feed into the whole forest planning process. But before we do that, Nathan, tell us a little bit more about some of the wild places that you have visited within the broader Gila National Forest. You've visited the Gila Middle Box, where people don't often get to visit, the lower San Francisco River Canyon. Tell us about some of these wild places.
Sure. There's so many wild places out there. It's hard to really pick just one. You know, you mentioned the Gila Middle Box. A lot of people can go down to the Billings Vista birding area. There's a road that sort of ends there, and there's a small trail that goes for about a mile. And then it kind of sort of peters out. You're kind of left to sort of pick and choose your way to go down the Middle Box. And eventually you get to a place called Fawcett Canyon. And there's nowhere to go after Fawcett Canyon except in the river, because it's just sheer cliff walls either side of you. And I had the great fortune to kayak that segment of the Gila Middle Box in January of last year. There was some snowmelt that came down and the river went up to about 300 cubic feet per second. And we were like, okay, let's hit the Middle Box. And we got down past Fawcett Canyon. You're in this little kayak, and all of a sudden, you're hitting Class 2 rapids, and Class 3 rapids in some instances, with these big boulders and, you know, waves crashing everywhere. And it's just a spectacular scenery of 1,000-foot cliff walls either side of you. But you want to stop and look at it, but you can't, because you have to stay focused on the river. Otherwise, you're going to flip over and get tossed out of your boat. So the ability to experience something like that, not only on the Gila National Forest, but in southern New Mexico, is very rare. To experience Class 2 rapids on a river in the desert. You know, think about that. That's a really rare opportunity to do. That's just one example. I got to backpack the lower San Francisco River, which is south of Glenwood. It goes about 17 miles of the river segment, goes all the way to the Arizona border. Very wild place. We saw a ton of deer. We saw bears, bighorn sheep, coata mundi. It's really special, these places. The Mogollon Box, the upper Gila Box, which is immediately adjacent to the Gila Wilderness, is just as wild as the Gila Wilderness. You know, that place is equally as special. You get to experience kayaking opportunities up there as well. A lot of horsebacking opportunities. One place in particular that I really enjoy is some land up on the northern end of the Aldo Leopold Wilderness. There's a place called Taylor Creek that is the headwaters of the East Fork of the Gila River that feeds into Wall Lake before it goes into the Gila River, or East Fork of the Gila River. And nobody goes into Taylor Creek. It's very isolated. It's about a 20-mile-long canyon that's really difficult to access. There is access to it, but it's challenging to get to it. And when I went down there, we were doing an inventory, and I was with this young woman, and we got down to Taylor Creek, and we saw this herd of elk, about 30 or 40 elk just scampering up the side of the canyon wall. Wow. We're like, wow, this is great. So we kept going down, and then we saw that there was no trail system of any kind. It was just elk and deer trails. So you're following elk and deer going down this creek. Again, Taylor Creek looks like the West Fork of the Gila River. I mean, it's got the very dramatic canyon walls. There's cliff dwellings and pueblo sites up in these various caves that are everywhere. And we're going down Taylor Creek, and I see this animal pop up from behind a rock. Look, he was probably drinking water, and I see it's a mountain lion, and this mountain lion darts off like down the creek, and I'm like, holy cow, there's a mountain lion right there. And so we like kind of ran after a little bit to try and get a better look at it. And subsequently after that, we found two giant elk sheds that were really fresh right next to a ponderosa pine that the elk had, you know, scraped its antlers against, and we carried that out. And just a really magical place. But I see stuff like that just about everywhere I go in the Gila National Forest. These places are so wild. They're so beautiful. And one of my goals in the future is to try and take more people, especially locals, out to these areas so they can get a chance to connect with them and fall in love with them with just as much as I do.
Yeah, I have a question for you about the Middle Box.
Yeah.
How do you get in if you can't kayak? Is there a way to get into the Middle Box if you don't want to go down the river? Can you still hike in there?
You can. there'd be a lot of swimming involved because there's a gauging station at the end of the middle box near the town of Red Rock. And anybody can go online to the U.S. Geological Survey website, USGS stream flow is what you want to look at. And you can look at the cubic feet per second of any gauging station in the state of New Mexico. And it'll tell you what the flow is and what the gauge height is. And typically the gauge height in the middle box is around 5 feet. And the final 7 miles of the middle box, that's the box. There's nowhere to go except in the river. So you can walk down about 3 miles to Fawcett Canyon from the parking area, Billings Vista Birding Area. You can walk down about 3 miles to Fawcett Canyon. After that, you're going to be having to walk
in trouble.
You're going to have to walk the river.
Or swim it, yeah.
If the flows are low enough, I've seen the gauge at Red Rock probably around 3 feet. So that's still, you know, waist high. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of, you know, water to be walking through.
Right. So
you could go down a little further past Fawcett Canyon, but it would be not advisable, you know, in monsoon season, obviously, or when it's raining.
Right.
I would say that there are other places in the middle box besides the river that you can go explore. There's about 12 miles, I believe, of the Continental Divide Trail that goes through the Gila Middle Box. So you can access the Continental Divide Trail. At least currently you can, I believe. There's other canyons in the Middle Box, like Moon Hole Canyon, which are right across the river from the Billings Vista Birding Area. Ira Ridge, Ira Canyon is a really popular place. So is Wild Horse Canyon. And there's a couple other canyons that are in and around that sort of general starting point that people can access. There aren't any maintained trails, so you're just going to be walking up canyons and drainages, but you know, you can easily walk up canyons and drainages, but it's you just expect a wild experience.
Are any of these wild places in the Gila that you visit, are they described in the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance annual guide? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that. The places you're describing sound amazing, but how do people get more information?
The New Mexico Wilderness Alliance for many years published a book called The Wild Guide. It was an annual book that sort of was mainly about showcasing hikes and projects that we were going to do throughout the year. That ended up being not really good for our budget. We weren't making any money off of it, and we were spending a lot of money to produce it. So we decided to change the Wild Guide and make it more of a comprehensive book about all of New Mexico's wilderness areas, all of New Mexico's wilderness study areas, and in particular, some of the areas that we're working to protect right now, like you mentioned, and here on the Gila. So there definitely is information in the Wild Guide, the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance Wild Guide, on the Gila Middle Box, the Lower San Francisco Canyon, Mogollon Box, and some of the other areas that we're working on. And so you can find that at some bookstores here in Silver City. You can also get it online. Our website is nmwild.org, the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. So it's a really convenient book. It's got maps. It's got, you know, suggested hikes. It's got directions on how to get to these places, and then just a host of other information that's really helpful. And it's meant to be a book that you can utilize for many years because, again, it has all the wilderness areas and all the areas that we're working on currently in New Mexico.
All right. We'll be right back after this short break, and we'll talk more about the Gila National Forest with New Mexico Wilderness Alliance organizer Nathan Newcomer. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, director of the Gila Resources Information Project, and your host for today's program. My guest is Nathan Newcomer, Gila grassroots organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and we've been talking about the Gila National Forest. Nathan, the Gila National Forest is updating its 30-year-old forest plan.
Right.
Can you tell us about the process? Because we're kind of at the beginning stages. Yeah. So tell us what's happening.
Yeah. So just a little bit of context here. There's something called the 2012 Planning Rule or National Forest Management Act Planning Rule. These were guidelines that were updated by the Obama administration in 2012. They spent about 4 years trying to update the National Forest Management Act, because the National Forest Management Act began back in the early 80s, in the late 70s. And it was sort of the first foray of the Forest Service into doing comprehensive forest management planning. Like, how do we manage timber resources? How do we manage fisheries? How do we manage, you know, roadless areas, grazing, watersheds, air, soil? all that kind of stuff. And the Obama administration realized that these regulations were pretty out of date and that they had to address new things that we've been encountering in our livelihoods, like climate change. And so they began this really comprehensive reform of the guidelines in 2008. And then in 2012, they issued the final directives. And these new directives direct every single national forest across the country to update their land use management plans. And as you said, the Gila National Forest Land Use Management Plan is from 1986, so it's 30 years old. And the Gila National Forest has been going around to all the different communities in the Gila National Forest area, telling people that this is coming, we're going to have to revise this plan to deal with all these new elements and to update our old regulations because they're just out of date. And they did that, and now they've released something called an assessment report, a draft assessment report, which is essentially kind of, it is what it says it is. It's an assessment of the Gila National Forest. And they go through this, 20-chapter document. It's about 1,000 pages long. It came out a couple of weeks ago. And it goes through what's the assessment of soils in the Gila National Forest and what's the assessment of vegetation, of upland vegetation, of riparian areas, of water quality, social economic issues, tribal concerns. I mean, the list is really comprehensive. And so they've released this draft assessment to the public for comment. It's available now. If you go to the Gila National Forest website, you can download the entire document. I would not recommend everybody try to read 1,000 pages because a lot of it can be, it's just cumbersome.
Dense.
Yeah, it's really dense. If there's certain sections that you're particularly interested in, you can go to those sections. And not all of them are, lengthy. Some of them are 20 pages. Some might be 40 pages. I think some of them are in the neighborhood of 100 or 200 pages, which are, it's kind of hard to get through. But the one thing I would say is that if people are listening to this and you have a particular interest in certain aspects of the Gila National Forest, like at-risk species, for example, there's a complete section about at-risk species in the Gila National Forest, and you should take your time to read that segment. And if you see things that are missing or that seem wrong or that don't make sense, that you should write in your comments to the Gila National Forest and explain why you think something is missing or why something you perceive to be inaccurate.
Right. So, Nathan, you mentioned the 2012 Forest Planning Rule. And according to the rule, the forest plan is supposed to lay out the strategic direction for management of forest resources.
Yeah.
So what are some of these strategic directions that could be pursued? Like, what does that really mean?
Well, I think it's yet to be seen, to be honest, what that is, because this is such a new rule. The National Forest Management Act Planning Rule 2012 is so new that the agency picked about 6 or 8, I can't remember how many it was, early adopter forests, they called them, to kind of try and implement the new rule and sort of see what the lay of the land was going to be like and where there might be pitfalls and where they might see some success. Luckily, New Mexico had one of those early adopter forests, the Cibola National Forest, and they went through, they're still going through the process. They're not even halfway done, I don't think. They have yet to issue a draft environmental impact statement, but we learned a lot from the Cibola's process on how things could be done and how they could be done differently. And I think that overall, though, to get to your question about the strategic decision, I think what it really boils down to is long-term management of sustainability of the resources on the national forest, whether that be, again, vegetation health, carbon stocks, how do we deal with climate change and carbon, sequestration in our national forest, or, something that people probably would really care about are like trails, trail conditions. Recreation is another big chapter in the draft assessment report. Long-term sustainability is really kind of the major strategic decision that I think the agency is striving for. How can they sustain, recreation in the Gila National Forest in the face of climate change or, development happening and more and more people trying to seek out experiences in the national forest. One other thing that I thought was really cool to see in the assessment was this concept of they had something called scenic character. And in scenic character, they also talked about night sky and how, we just had the Cosmic Campground designated
right.
as the first international cosmic campground, I think it was. Something like that.
From the International Dark Skies Association or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they have a whole segment. It's not very long. It's maybe like 5 or 6 paragraphs. But they point out and the assessment that night sky is a dwindling resource, you know, right. If you could look at it that way as a resource, and that the Gila National Forest, they have this really great map that shows, you know, southwestern New Mexico and southeastern Arizona, and it shows the population centers and these big, like, glowing balls of light that can be emanating from these population centers. But then over the Gila National Forest is this big black mass, you know, that basically says 3/4 of the Gila National Forest, you can experience these dark night skies. Like, you can't really see that anywhere, and that's dwindling.
It is impressive. I've flown Boutique Air from Albuquerque back to Silver City, and at night, you can't see anything when you're flying over the Gila, and it's a huge expanse. Yeah. It is so impressive. It's so true. It is so dark.
Yeah, so it was really great to see kind of some of that in the assessment report, sort of this kind of thinking that, mm-hmm. you know, like the Cibola National Forest, for example, their assessment report was more like a data dump. They just kind of said, okay, here's what we had from 30 years ago. We're just going to regurgitate it all. And it wasn't really helpful, in my opinion. The Gila National Forest didn't do that. They didn't do this big data dump. They did a really good job, I think, for the most part, in terms of assessing the current conditions of the national forest.
And then if people have additions, suggestions for how to beef up the assessment, people are going to have an opportunity to make public comments.
And correct. The public comment period is currently open. It will stay open until November 15th. That being said, you can still provide comments after November 15th. It would just be helpful for the Forest Service if you can get them in before that. There's going to be a slew of public meetings happening throughout the Gila National Forest beginning, I believe, next week on October 24th, I think is the first date. So they'll have meetings in, obviously, Silver City, Glenwood Reserve, Caimado, the Wilderness Ranger District, I think is holding one in San Lorenzo. And then they're also going to have a couple of public meetings in Truth or Consequences and Las Cruces, which I thought was excellent to see, to reach out to these broader communities that definitely utilize the Gila National Forest.
Absolutely. So, Nathan, let's put where we are right now in the planning process in context for the overall planning process. So right now, the draft assessment report has been released. So what do things look like for the process as a whole? NEPA is going to start at some point here. So how does this all fit together?
So the assessment report is essentially the very first step. And this is a draft assessment. They've sent this out for public review. Then they'll get public comment back on it. And then they'll have to issue something called a needs for change document. The needs for change document is really a critical piece in the planning process, because that is essentially what is going to guide the draft environmental impact statement and the creation of alternatives that the agency will have to pick from. And so the needs for change document will come after public comment on the assessment report. And the needs for change document, from our perspective, should have things in there that say there is a need and opportunity to protect additional designated areas such as recommended wilderness and recommended wild and scenic rivers, just because for the fact that there is so much wild land out there in the Gila National Forest that could be designated as wilderness, there is an opportunity there. And so the needs for change document should have to reflect things like that. Once the needs for change document is finalized, then the agency will likely do their wilderness inventory and evaluation phase. There's something in the 2012 planning rule that directs the agency to do a comprehensive, broad, and inclusive wilderness inventory to assess what lands in the Gila National Forest could be designated as wilderness. It's really important to note that the agency cannot designate wilderness, but they can identify lands that have wilderness character. And so that sort of ties in with all the work that I've been doing, is identifying these lands in advance time to then provide the state of the agency and say, hey, here's what we found. This is the places that we think qualify. We want to give this information to you. The wilderness inventory and wild and scenic inventory is sort of a separate process in the way the planning rule is set up. After they do that, they'll then have to craft a draft environmental statement, an EIS. And the EIS will be a very comprehensive, very large document, probably several volumes with large appendices, and that will be open for public comment and review, and then eventually they'll issue a final environmental impact statement and a record of decision. The agency has said to us, the Forest Service has said to us, that they expect this whole process to take about 4 years, which I think is commendable for them to try and do it in 4 years. But as we, most of us know, these planning documents can take longer than that. I believe the travel management rule and the travel management decision here in the Gila, and it took like 8-9 years, I think, to complete. And it was supposed to be another 3 or 4 year process. So we'll see how that all pans out. But right now, like I said, we're just in the very early stages. And again, I just want to encourage folks to take the time, if they do have it, to review the assessment report. And in particular, look at the chapters that you have your most concern and interest in.
Yeah, and we'll get a chance to talk about the assessment report in more detail here in our upcoming segment. But you mentioned travel management. Mm-hmm. How does the travel management plan fit into the forest plan briefly?
So they separated the two by design. It makes sense to do travel management separately from a forest plan. It remains to be seen how it's going to fit into the Gila forest plan as a whole. There is a section in the Gila assessment report that's called infrastructure, and the infrastructure does talk about roads. But as we all know, the travel management plan was a really comprehensive, lengthy document about which roads to close, which ones to keep open, which ones you can have dispersed camping on, which ones are now motorized trails, so on and so forth. So I don't think you're going to see that level of detail by any means in the Gila forest plan revision, because it's already been sort of dealt with. I think the one thing that I would like to see in the Gila forest plan is talking about decommissioning roads and how they're going to do that, because that's a whole other step. You've got 3,000 some odd miles of roads open in the Gila National Forest. That's a lot of miles in the Gila National Forest. And then you've got, I think, around 1,500 or so that are now closed. Okay, the ones that are closed, what are you going to do with them? And decommissioning is a big component of that, because if you're going to close a road, you need to figure out if it's going to have impacts on watershed and erosion and things of that nature, because roads notoriously cause a lot of erosion and cause a lot of problems with streams and riparian areas. So I would hope that the National Forest Plan deals with roads in terms of how you're going to get rid of them, the ones that are not open anymore.
Because, of course, they're impacting the assets, the different characteristics of the forest.
Right.
Okay, so we'll be right back after this short break, and we'll talk more about the Gila Forest Plan with New Mexico Wilderness Alliance's Nathan Newcomer. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Director of the Gila Resources Information Project, and your host for today's program. My guest is Nathan Newcomer, and we're talking today about the forest plan for the Gila National Forest. Public meetings on the draft assessment report start next week. So in order for people to get a good sense, Nathan, of the draft assessment report, let's talk in more detail. So maybe you could give us a sense of some of the findings.
There's a lot in here to look at. So, for example, one of the areas that I was really interested in was the designated areas, obviously, because that pertains to potential new wilderness, potential new wild and scenic rivers. And the assessment report did a good job of sort of describing existing designated areas, kind of, you know, recognize that the Gila wilderness is, you know, the first wilderness ever designated in the country, that it's a very wild and remote place, contributes a very distinct heritage and benefits to people that utilize the wilderness. So that was good to see things like that, where they acknowledged the excellence of wilderness that we have here in the Gila National Forest and why it's such a good thing. On the flip side of that, they didn't say anything about the need and opportunity for additional designated areas. What they explicitly said, that the wilderness inventory and wild and scenic inventory is a whole separate process that will be dealt with later on. And that was kind of their only mention of potential need and opportunity, was we'll deal with that later, basically.
Meaning in the need and opportunity part of the planning process, or what do they mean by that?
The National Forest Management Act, the new planning rules of 2012, there's something called Chapter 70 and Chapter 80. Chapter 70 is specifically about wilderness inventory. Chapter 80 is specifically about wild and scenic inventory and eligibility studies. So what they're what they're saying is that the planning rule directs the Forest Service to do these inventories separately. And so they will have to do that separately. But what was a little discouraging for me was that they said that in the assessment report, but they didn't say anything else about the potential need and opportunity for additional designated areas. I think there was one sentence that said, we're not aware of any report or anything out there that says that there's a need and opportunity for additional designated areas. But then they don't talk anything else about it. They just sort of talk about, well, we've got these great wilderness areas. They're wonderful. We've got 29 inventoried roadless areas, which have excellent scenic character, and scenic character is one of the main things we want to, you know, continue moving forward with our national forest planning. They did say in there's a summary with each chapter of the assessment report that kind of gives an overview of what the public comment was for each individual, you know, chapter. And for the designated areas, it noted that wilderness is a very polarizing, you know, topic, and that some people were like, we want more wilderness. Other people said we have too much wilderness and yada, yada, yada. And then in the end of it, it was like some people specifically said places like the Gila Middle Box and the Mogollon Box should be looked at for permanent protection. So overall, I thought it was good in terms of the designated areas section, but it was definitely missing some key elements. And those are things that, you know, we'll be submitting our comments on and want to encourage the public to as well. Other things that I looked at, again, this was a 1,000-page document, so I haven't read all of it, but I think I mentioned earlier the recreation chapter mentioned the dark skies and their importance, mm-hmm. which I thought was fantastic. There's also a little section in the recreation chapter about caves, which I think most people probably don't think of the Gila National Forest and think about caving. But there are some unique caving opportunities in the Gila National Forest, and they noted in their assessment that there is no comprehensive management plan for conserving caves in the Gila National Forest, but that we do have several caves that are rather quite large that people can go exploring in, which is kind of a unique thing for us to have here in the Gila.
What about rock climbing? Is that mentioned?
I didn't see anything about rock climbing in the recreation section. I don't know of any groups that utilize rock climbing in the Gila. Maybe I'm out of the loop, but I'm not aware of any rock climbing opportunities. Again, I mentioned scenic character. They noted that approximately 45% of forest lands are either designated as wilderness areas or are inventoried roadless areas. So about half of the national forest is roadless, which is fantastic. Other things about recreation, they cited a plan from the New Mexico Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department in 2015 that notes the percentage of outdoor activities that New Mexicans like to engage in. 41% of New Mexicans like to go walking, hiking, and running in our Gila National Forest. That's a pretty high number. Mm-hmm. 17% like to go hunting, fishing, and wildlife viewing. I'm not sure why they put wildlife viewing in with hunting. It's kind of funny. Camping, only 10%. And then it sort of from there it went down to like 5 and 4% for just visiting lakes and sightseeing. So the majority of people that like to utilize the Gila like to go hiking or walking in the Gila National Forest. So they noted that. And they also noted with the recreation chapter that one of the main themes that the public from both sides were saying is that the trail conditions are pretty poor in the Gila National Forest. And they're looking for ways to try and deal with that, especially with an ever shrinking budget that the agency has to deal with. And so they didn't actually say what they were going to do for trails, but they kind of just gave this assessment that trail conditions aren't that great. Some trails are in great shape, but some of those trails that are in great shape get a ton of use. So like the Middle Fork of the Gila River gets a ton of use at times. And so that, again, for me was like, well, wait a minute. If you're saying some of these areas are getting heavy use, well, there's a need. There's an opportunity for maybe additional designated areas because this particular area is getting a lot of use and gets more opportunity for the public to experience wild places in solitude. Another chapter is the at-risk species chapter. That notes that there are 12 federally endangered, 10 threatened, and 2 proposed threatened species and 1 candidate species located in the 4 counties of the Gila National Forest. However, only 4 endangered species that include the southwestern willow flycatcher, the Gila chub, Lutch minnow, and spike dace, and 1 non-essential experimental population of Mexican gray wolves, including 7 threatened species of Chiricahua leopard frog, Mexican spotted owl, yellow-billed cuckoo, Chihuahua chub, Gila trout, narrow-headed garter snake, and northern Mexican garter snake are within the planning area. One thing that I thought was really neat to see that they noted that jaguars are within the four counties. Just reading that and thinking, wow, there's actually jaguars out there, you know, roaming around. They're not quite in the Gila yet, but they're close by. So the at-risk species segment, I think, could be better, too. I spoke with some people at the Audubon Society, and they had a list of about, I believe, 50 bird species that they thought were at risk in the Gila National Forest. And as many of us know, the Gila is, you know, a real sanctuary for birds. A lot of different species of birds, hundreds of species of birds come through the Gila National Forest. And they didn't get to see hardly any of their recommendations in the assessment report. I hope that's not a glaring oversight by the agency on their part. Maybe what I would like to see is people like the Audubon Society resubmit these lists of species that they feel are species of conservation concern and get that into the Needs for Change document, that there's a need and opportunity to designate additional species of conservation concern.
And what does this mean from a management perspective in terms of these at-risk species? What would the forest plan kind of lay out in terms of strategies or management?
So I don't really know, but from reading the assessment report, it explicitly states that, you know, if a species is endangered or threatened, there are key elements of the Endangered Species Act that sort of mandate certain protections and habitat protections for these species. So I would hope that when species are found to be at risk or that they're species of conservation concern, the forest plan would deal with the species on a forest-wide basis in terms of the ecological health of the environment for those species to thrive and persist in the national forest. So it wouldn't just be like, okay, we'll talk about X species in this section only, but you would talk about it across the plan. So how does our plan affect this species in the vegetation section? How does it affect the species in the soil section and the water section and the riparian section? That's my hope, is to see the sort of broad
So like maintaining, just thinking of an example, maintaining riparian habitat, say, for southwestern willow flycatcher.
Right. Or like increasing habitat for southwestern willow flycatcher by 30% or something like that.
But protecting what we've got right now, but possibly enhancing the habitat.
That's what I would hope it would say.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's something that the public has a real opportunity to influence and provide information like that,
right,
to say, in order for this species to succeed and to persist, because that's the key word to me. It's not just, you know, holding a baseline. We have to make sure that these species can persist in the face of climate change and, you know, development happening all across the West. How can these species persist? That's what the plan should be really looking at, is because the plan is looking to manage the resources of the national forest for the next 20, 30 years. And so you have to have something in place that you can monitor accordingly.
And so on that theme, thinking about the NEPA process and evaluation under the Endangered Species Act, is that something that, say, the NEPA process will look at in terms of, does the forest plan, will it allow for the persistence, say, of southwestern willow flycatcher, an endangered species?
They'll definitely have to look at that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Because, again, the Endangered Species Act has very specific clauses in it,
mm-hmm,
that when, if you have an endangered species in your area, you have to do everything in your power, basically, to make sure that that species persists.
So Endangered Species Act evaluation will come into play in this forest planning process at some point.
At some point, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question about cultural resources.
Yeah.
Are cultural resources evaluated in the forest plan too?
They sure are.
Okay.
They sure are. I personally haven't read that section yet. We've got about, I don't know, maybe a dozen different groups who are sort of combing through the Gila draft assessment report. And I don't think anybody has signed up to review that section yet. But that is definitely a topic within the draft assessment report, and will definitely be something within the broader planning rule for sure.
Yeah, it seems like protection of cultural resources on public lands, mm-hmm, is a huge issue in our country in terms, mm-hmm, of making sure that these sites aren't destroyed,
vandalized.
Right. Exactly. And I know there's kind of a balance in terms of maybe identifying where these sites are, because you don't really want to give that information to the public,
right,
because then that increases the probability for vandalism. Well, that'll be an interesting chapter, I think, to review and sort of see how the forest is going to handle that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It is, like you said, sort of an interesting balance, because you want to make sure you can identify cultural resources and where they're located, but like you said, on the other hand, you don't want to broadcast that information,
right.
And the agency is really leery of broadcasting that information. In fact, if you look at the travel management rule, it hasn't been implemented for the Glenwood or the Silver City District because they're still reviewing cultural resources that are sort of overlapping with the road network that's out there. And so it's a really arduous sort of task to go through different cultural resources.
So what other sections, Nathan, are in the draft assessment report that stick out for you as good or not so good?
Again, I've mainly looked at the recreation section, the infrastructure section, designated areas section, and I haven't really looked at anything else. I sort of skimmed through portions of the water section, the riparian section. The water section dealt with a lot of water quality issues, and it had like a lot of like figures and pH levels and numbers, and that's kind of went over my head. Like, I'm not that big of a policy person, but
right. So essentially, there's overlap here with soils or watershed health, and the fact that
right. If
you've got a lot of erosion due to roads or maybe grazing, you could have associated water quality issues due to land uses.
Yeah.
So that's all addressed in this plan.
Oh, it is. It is all addressed. And they'll have to look even further at it moving forward with the needs for change document. So, again, the assessment report is the bare bones sort of beginning comprehensive overview, if you will, of where we stand currently with the Gila and where we want to see it going forward in the future.
All right. We'll be right back after this short break, and we'll talk more about the Gila Forest Plan with Nathan Newcomer, Gila grassroots organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of the Gila Resources Information Project, and your host for today's program. My guest is Nathan Newcomer, Gila grassroots organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. And today we've been talking about the forest plan for the Gila National Forest. And Nathan, maybe you could give us a sense of what the goals are for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance for the forest planning process and the plan itself.
Sure. I mean, really simple. Our goals are to protect as much wilderness quality land as possible, and to designate as many eligible wild and scenic rivers and streams in the Gila National Forest. I think I noted earlier that approximately half of the Gila National Forest is roadless. About 25% of it is already wilderness. And so to me, in my mind, having half of the Gila National Forest permanently protected seems like a pretty darn good balance. We, like I said in the very beginning, we've documented and inventoried about 650,000 acres of potential new wilderness. If we could get anywhere near that in the forest plan, that would be tremendous. If we could get 200 river miles designated as eligible for wild and scenic river designation, that would also be very tremendous. So I just want to reiterate again that the Forest Service cannot designate wilderness. They cannot designate wild and scenic rivers. What they can do is recommend those designations. And with a recommendation for wilderness or for wild and scenic, you essentially get sort of interim protections. So if you have the Gila Middle Box as a recommended wilderness area with 10 miles of the Gila River as being recommended for wild and scenic rivers, then the Forest Service is required to maintain that area's wilderness characteristics and to maintain its wild river characteristics. So they wouldn't be allowed to do dams and diversions on that segment of the Gila River or do development within the landscape that would destroy or detract from the area's current wilderness character. So if you can get, again, wilderness recommendations or wild and scenic recommendations in a forest plan, you do get some interim protections until basically Congress decides to act. And so overall, if we can get recommendations in the plan, the next step is to pursue legislation in Congress to get wilderness bills passed and to get wild and scenic legislation passed.
All right. So we mentioned previously that the public has an opportunity to get their voice heard, to make public comments. So we've got public meetings starting next week. I think Monday, October 24th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Roundup Lodge in San Lorenzo. Let's see, the Silver City meeting, November 2nd, from 4 to 6:30 p.m. at the WNMU Global Resource Center. Do you know what the format is for these public meetings?
From what I've seen, they said it's going to be an open house style.
Okay.
So that the public could just show up whenever they wanted. You didn't have to like be there from the very beginning to the very end. You could just go in. What that's going to look like, I'm unclear on. I expect that there'll probably be some sort of like round table discussions where you'll have like a representative from the Gila National Forest at this table and another representative at this other table. And then the public can go to sit down these tables and sort of share their input and feedback and ask questions at these various tables. That's what the open house forum sounds like to me. So that's probably a good thing. Normally in the past, when you've seen some of these meetings, if you can get, you know, people together in the room that don't necessarily agree with one another, you can get some really uncomfortable scenarios and situations. And so I think by having sort of this more localized sitting around a table kind of discussion should hopefully deflate some of that angst that we've seen in the past. I think that's also something that they've learned from the Cibola National Forest when they had some of their early public meetings. You'd have like 300 people show up to a meeting and start yelling and screaming at the Forest Service, and that's not productive for anybody. Mm-hmm. So I hope these open town style meetings will be productive.
Okay, and so typically they've got public comment forms that people can fill out,
right? Yeah.
And people can also submit longer comments via email.
Sure.
So how can people get more information on the meetings and how to make public comment?
Just go to the Gila National Forest website. If you just Google Gila National Forest, it's right there on the homepage. There's a section of links on the right-hand side. That one will say Forest Plan Revision. And if you click on Forest Plan Revision, you'll get a whole page dedicated to the Forest Plan Revision, the history of forest planning. And then you can also download the assessment report, the draft assessment report. And you can also see a list of all the public meetings that are coming up. Just if I can, I'll just run off the other dates that we have. We have October 25th in Queimado from 5 to 7. At the Queimado High School. October 26th will be in Glenwood from 4 to 6:30 at the Glenwood Community Center. October 27th, again from 4 to 6:30 at the Catron County Fairgrounds and Reserve. And then the meetings outside of sort of the Gila area are November 1st in TRC at the Lion Event Center and November 3rd in Las Cruces at the Farm and Ranch Museum. So a lot of opportunity for the public to be engaged, and I think it's great that they're, again, including places like TRC and Las Cruces in their outreach, because I do know a lot of people that come to the Gila from Las Cruces because, you know, they're down there with the desert, and up here we got the beautiful forest, so.
One thing I noted on the Gila National Forest website, they're calling this a collaborative planning process. So tell us, why is it important for the public to participate and provide their input and to collaborate? What's so important about collaboration?
Yeah, the 2012 planning rule emphasized heavily on collaboration. Even the crafting of the rule was collaborative. Like, I remember going to meetings in 2009 where everybody was sitting at these small tables and collaborating on how they thought the forest plan should, or the revision of planning should look like. And they've really stuck with that, and they've kept with that. I think that when you can get people to honestly and openly collaborate, you can oftentimes come to the conclusion that we really don't disagree that much on things. You know, ultimately, most people, if you ask them, do you care about the Gila National Forest and the health of it? I'd say 99% of people would say yes. And I think that if you can sort of start there, start from a baseline of like an agreement on something, it might be easier to go through the discussions that are going to be harder where you do disagree. And I think this collaborative approach, I hope that this collaborative approach will be able to bring some of these non-traditional allies together to the table to discuss topics that at times can be polarizing and difficult to talk about, but where we can hopefully try and find some common ground. That's yet to be seen, but that I think that approaching it in a collaborative way at least gives you that chance and gives you that opportunity to find common ground.
So, Nathan, what comes after the assessment report? So the public comment period ends, you said, November
15th.
So people make your public comments before November 15th. Then what happens?
Then they'll have to start crafting the needs for change document. And the needs for change document will take all this public comment that people are submitting on the assessment report. And the needs for change document is essentially the baseline for how the National Forest will move forward with their Gila National Forest plan, the new plan. The needs for change document will guide sort of the direction of the new plan. And so that's the really important next step is the needs for change document and identifying where there is a need and where there is an opportunity to make changes.
And when do we think that is going to start, that phase?
Good question. Maybe December.
And then, again, public comment,
right.
Still a collaborative process
right.
to get input.
Right. Right. Essentially, public comment, the public will be allowed to engage and participate in the planning document all the way through the draft environmental impact statement. So we're still talking about probably another year or two before we see a draft environmental impact statement come out. Once the draft EIS is available, then it's sort of in the public comments on that. Then at that point, it's sort of in the hands of the Forest Service. Then they have to decide the direction for the management of the forest for all those chapters we were talking about earlier. And that will be the new plan that will come out after that draft EIS comes out.
Okay. And when can we expect the wilderness inventory and the evaluation phase of the plan revisions to start? So that's actually the stuff that you've been working on with your volunteers.
Yeah.
That's going to get interjected here into this process.
That'll happen after, at least what I've been told, is that will happen after the Needs for Change document is completed. The Wilderness Inventory and Evaluation, the Wild and Scenic Inventory and Evaluation will be separate from the creation of the draft environmental impact statement because they'll have to have made an informed decision firsthand about the inventory and the evaluation of these areas. And then once they've done that step, they'll incorporate that into the creation of the draft environmental impact statement.
Okay. Well, Nathan, in the last minute or so that we've got here in the program, can you give us some closing thoughts on the Gila National Forest planning process, some thoughts for our listeners?
The main thing that I would say is don't feel like you can't make a difference. All of my volunteers that I've been working with for the last 3 years, you know, these people didn't have the experience and the expertise and the training from the very beginning on how to do wilderness inventory and evaluations. And now, quite frankly, they're all rock stars. You know, they really have done a fantastic job together. And having documented over 650,000 acres of new wilderness in the Gila National Forest with volunteers, anybody can make a difference. You just have to have the drive and the willingness to sort of take a leap of faith and try to, you know, make your voice heard. I would just encourage anybody and everybody that's listening to this program to seek out and read the assessment report, or at least the chapters that you care about. If you have questions, ask your friends, ask me, ask around on how you can make a difference, because we're talking about the future management of our beloved Gila National Forest for the next 30 years. That's another generation. And I think we all want to see it wild and free.
All right. So public meetings on the Gila National Forest Plan start next week, run for 2 weeks, start October 24th, run through November 3rd. Nathan, for more information, where do people go?
You can go to the Gila National Forest website. Just Google in Gila National Forest, or you can email me. My email address is Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, at nmwild.org.
All right, Nathan Newcomer, thank you so much for talking with me today about the forest planning process and how people can participate. That's all the time we have today. And thank you to our audio engineer, Kyle Johnson. For a podcast of today's program, visit the Earth Matters program page online at gmcr.org. We hope you'll join us again for next week's edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio 89.1 FM.